seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to the Ryan Line. It is Thursday. It is Nathan and Shane with you. How are you, Shane Ryan?
I'm good, Nathan. It is a rainy morning here, but we need the rain. You know, the classic middle-aged dad thing. We really need it. Everything's dry. So let it pour, I say. Very Irish day.
Oh, beautiful. We're having beautiful sunshine outside, so
We've switched.
We don't need the rain. We're not quite at that level just yet. We're doing just fine. You're still at home then. When are you heading? Are you heading to Pennsylvania? You are heading to Pennsylvania.
Yes, I believe I will drive up Tuesday. And I'll tell you this. On Wednesday night, Nathan, I don't know if you read this or if you even heard about this, but there was a wonderful feature article in The Atlantic about the best free restaurant bread in America. Truly one of the greatest articles I've ever read. No exaggeration. Happens to be in this place called Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia, like a block from where our Airbnb is. So we are eating there Wednesday night. So if we do this next Thursday, I will be fresh off eating what is supposedly the best free restaurant bread in the U.S. And so I can kind of, we can, you know, probably spend most of the show next week on that.
Now, I know you say free restaurant bread. Top quality, and I had some, you know, I wouldn't really be one for restaurant bread, but I had some last Friday with it was called a carbonara butter, which was unbelievable. And the bread, I don't think the bread was free. They kind of tell you it's free, but then when you look at your bill, it's there. So is this an incredibly expensive restaurant where that you're justifying by saying the bread is free?
It's a French bistro. It's not like crazy. It's not like the most expensive restaurant you've ever seen. But probably an entree, like a steak, would cost $35 or something like that. So it's a night out. You know, it's a night out, but it's not going to completely break your budget at all.
Okay. How far away from you is Quail Hollow?
So Quail is in Charlotte, which is about a 2 to 2.5 hour drive. I used to go all the time. Now I don't go anymore. Something always bad happens to me in Charlotte. It's a cursed town for me. So when I can avoid it, but actually a lot of it is just that I'll be traveling next week, so I don't really want to travel this weekend. Now at this point, it's always right before the PGA. So
listen, guys,
I was there last year.
We never promised our listeners the hardest working golf journalists around. That was not part of the deal here. Yeah, you know, there's only a massive signature event a couple of hours down the road. You know, I could go, but Nah, not for me, pal.
There's like a 5% chance if there's like a really compelling final pairing Sunday, I could go down and walk with the leaders. But even that, you know, weather would have to be perfect.
Humble brag. You know, if it's Rory v. Spieth on Sunday, I guess I could consider it.
I would consider it.
If
I
nothing
would still
else
say
comes up.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Question one. Get your questions in. Discord channel, golfweekly@offtheball.com. This was one left over from last week. It was from The Beard. Shock horror. This is basically a personal podcast in many ways. but this is a good question. The RNA are looking at penalty shots for bad behavior. Is introducing VAR, so that's video assistant referee, for those of you not familiar, a dangerous step forward for golf? Will we get inconsistent decisions, and will we end up with someone going down 18th to discover they have a two-shot penalty for swearing on the 17th? Is this the end for Hatton, Garcia, and Bob? Do we really need nanny state behavior in golf?
All right, first question. Do you think you have any listeners who don't know what VAR is? Do you think that clarification was...
I don't know. You know, ye Americans have a different terminology.
Yeah, no, we know VAR. I don't like this. I didn't actually hear about this until reading this question. Initial reaction is it's such a gray area of like what crosses the line. And I know in other sports, like in soccer, you have to choose when there's a yellow card and a red card and all that. But this feels like, is it for swearing? Is it only if you throw a club? You know, what's the thing where you get a code of conduct violation? I don't think we need this. I mean, what... I would like to know what prompted the RNA to look at this. Was there a galvanizing incident? Was it a bunch of things? Does it say? Like, is there any one thing where they're like, we can't have this again. We need to penalize this.
Was it Sergio at the Masters?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, but you can already find people, right? I mean, you can already find people. But I guess to your point, or yeah, to the Beard's point, like when you're looking at slow play in U.S. golf, when there's that whole thing, it was like finding them is not enough. You need to have a material effect on their score. So I'm sure the RNA kind of has that same philosophy. Like we need to stroke them. They need to lose a stroke here. So I get it, but to me it would have to be a real high threshold of bad behavior. I would not want to see somebody dinged for, you know, shouting or swearing, and maybe that's not their plan. I don't know the details, but I'm cautiously against this one right now, Nathan.
I'm with you. I think VAR, video assistant referee, as we like to call it, here in this part of the world, it's something that's a very hot topic around football right now. It does bring even more inconsistency, but also what is bad behavior? Everyone has a slightly different moral code, and okay, even then you're down to, so Sergio smashing up the tee box at the Masters. I think we can all agree arsehole behavior deserves a fine, suspension, something like that. Again, you're into a little bit of, because it's Sergio, I double down on it, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, Rory tonight hits one out of bounds and sort of throws his driver at his caddy and it hits the ground first. Is that a penalty stroke? I don't know. Like, you also don't want to take the emotion out of it.
Totally.
Like, it's not as if people are like, we don't have a Sergio Garcia 10 times a day.
Yeah. Well, it's also funny because when you think about Sergio at the Masters, like, a penalty stroke would be nothing, right? He'd be like, who cares? Give me 10 penalty strokes. I don't care, right? I mean, he wasn't in contention. So the value of a penalty stroke is much different depending on your position in a tournament. So I don't know. To me, it's like, just keep it consistent with fines and suspensions if you feel that's warranted. But don't get into this. Don't get into this game, RNA. Don't do it.
Not Per Profit asks, what's biting Scotty that he's got so snotty with the media? Too big for his boots, or just seeing behind the dull veneer now?
So I have a piece that I think is coming out today on Digest about this. And, you know, the conclusion I've come to with Scotty. So you remember last year, Colin Morikawa, you know, shirking his duties at Bay Hill and then getting into a big fight with Chamblee and Paul McGinley and all that. That to me was to be discussed. It was rightly discussed under the framework of player media relations and, you know, who owes what and all this kind of stuff. And I wrote that big piece last year and blah, blah, blah. This to me is a more personal thing. I think this is about Scottie Scheffler. And to me, there have been two really, really good features about Scottie. One was written by Brody Miller in The Athletic in 2024. And one just came out a couple weeks ago by Kevin Van Valkenburg at The Fried Egg. And especially Brody's piece got into his hyper-competitiveness and what that looks like when it goes wrong. Because when we hear people say, oh, he hates to lose, you know, he's the most competitive guy, we think of victory. We think of him winning and triumphing because he hates it so much. But everybody loses, especially in golf. And so that's the flip side of it. It's like when you have that hatred of losing, that has to express itself in some way too. Scottie Scheffler was the kind of kid who was the ultimate sore loser. Like, he would lose and he would storm off in a rage. There was a story that Brody wrote in college when he was with Bronson Burgoon in a match play on a team. And basically there was miscommunication and Burgoon, in, you know, forced him to hit the wrong ball by accident. And Scottie just like ran up to the green, got the ball, threw it at Burgoon's feet and was pissed off at him the rest of the day. He is a petulant guy and he always has been. And I think there's something about Scottie where he's like this big, you know, he looks like a jock. He's big, he's strong, he's kind of gruff, where you're like, oh, petulant doesn't read with him. You don't look at him and see petulance. And yet that's like a huge ingredient of his personality. And so I think what you're seeing with the media is he's not quite up to his standard right now. And when things aren't going well for Scottie, he's irritable. And I think he's probably irritable with his caddy and et cetera. And the media is just another thing where when you get him in that raw state, he lashes out. This is just part of what he does. Now, when everything's going great, like at the Open Championship last year, he gives you these thoughtful, long answers, and he's a great interview and all that. But when things are not going great, this is the Scotty you get. And so just to kind of sum all that up, petulance is part of his personality. It comes out when things aren't going perfectly because he is a perfectionist and he is hyper-competitive. And this is kind of more about him than about like the broader media player relations. That's my take.
Of course, his take would be very different if it was Shane Lowry or Rory McIlroy behaving in such a manner. I've yet to hear you ever go, these guys are hyper competitive. You know, these guys were sore losers. This is how they take it out sometimes. You know, they didn't get to where they were by being second best. It's fine. No, these are petulant. Oh, I've no time for these. They're an absolute disgrace. I'm going to hang them out to dry at every possible opportunity.
I just called Scotty petulant. I literally just said that over and over, that he was petulant. Yeah. No, this is a guy. This is a guy who reacts emotionally. I mean, and you know, and look, Rory and Lowry is your point is not 100% wrong. It's just like 95% wrong. No, but Rory and Lowry, yeah, it's the same thing, right? We're just all saying negative emotions.
But there's a particularly with Lowry. They all have different ways of reacting to their disappointment. And Lowry's thing is that he is also hyper-competitive, but we have this impression of Lowry that I've brought up many times that he's this happy-go-lucky guy who just can't believe that he's out on the PGA Tour playing with all these guys, young fella from Offaly, living the dream. Every day he wakes up and he's just happy to be there. Whereas the reality is, no, he's won a major championship and he hasn't probably won as much as he feels he should have since then. And is pissed off about it, and that comes out in a different way than a Scotty Scheffler. But the idea that any of these guys have got to the level that they've got to by being good losers and by just shrugging off disappointments, that their reaction to that wasn't, I'm going to practice when they're 15 years of age, I'm going to practice more than anyone else, I'm going to practice 15 hours a day, so this never happens again. And again, Scotty's probably spoken about that better than anyone else as to why he does it. Like, it's the reward for all the hard work. It's the bit of, you know, I am pissed off because I did, you know, I'm worth 100 million quid at this stage. I could have spent last Tuesday at home with my family, eating in a nice restaurant, having a good time, but I went to the range for 10 hours to practice and then I played shit at the end of that and I'm not going to be happy about it.
You're totally right. You're totally right. And it's funny that how we typecast all of these guys, where it's like Scotty's kind of like the gruff jock, Lowry's the happy-go-lucky guy, whatever. Rory, I think, is the ultimate beneficiary because he's so likable in manner. Like the way he looks and talks, you like him so much that you almost, it doesn't jive when you see emotions that don't seem to fit the stereotype that you've made in your head. And then you have other people who look at him and go, I don't like this guy. Like something about his face, like I hate this guy. And then everything kind of follows from that. So yeah, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny the perception versus the reality. They are emotional human beings and they are, a lot of them, perfectionists. And I think Scotty takes it to the next level with that.
And again, it's a good thing because we spent an awful long time talking about Scotty that there's not enough on the edges, that it's all sort of straight, that, okay, we don't, you know, you want him to interact in a somewhat pleasant way, but having a little bit of an edge there is no bad thing.
I totally agree. And that's why I'm like, this is a case different from Morikawa for me last year, where I'm like, it seems very rude and it doesn't reflect well on him, I don't think. But also I kind of like that it's happening. Whereas Morikawa, it's just like, it comes off like a whiny,
you know,
like
a whiner. Morikawa's was a, I don't owe you a living.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. It's like Scotty shows up. It's just that if you ask him the wrong question when he's already in that mode of that like little kid mode where what he wants to do is charge off angrily and he's forced to stand there, he is going to be like, stupid question. And then go, just kidding, right? Like his whole like the whole giggle of like, he tries to bring it back. That's like the sort of the tragedy of this whole thing is he will laugh. And then try to, like, it's like he knows he kind of went wrong and he doesn't want to fully say, hey, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have used that tone, it wasn't warranted. So he'll just be like, huh. Like, even like Jason Sobel, when he's at the Masters, when he said, Sobel asked him, you know, how good could the score could have been or whatever it was. And Scotty goes, just awful question. And then later in the press conference, he said, he's like, I'm not going to go after you. I already was kind of a jerk to a question that was pretty much fine. Right. So he kind of gave it back. Like he acknowledged in some weird way that he went too far. It's just that he's, you know, I like to see it burn. I like to see the fire burn that way. And it's just like it happens in different ways. I made the comparison to Michael Jordan, where Michael Jordan was probably the most pathologically competitive athlete maybe that's ever lived. And his thing was like about demolishing people. And he carried it with swagger and with arrogance. And Scottie's is like an emotional kind of retreat. It's like sort of like, I'm angry, I'm upset, I want to be a little bit petulant, and I want to be a little whiny. But it is. It's all part of the, you know, the great spectrum of being pissed off because you didn't win.
Maybe this leads into the next question. Hi, lads. Not sure if this is a question or not, but wanted to get your thoughts on Scottie over the last few weeks. In his last three starts, he's come second to the second, third, and fourth best players in the world. Not much needs to change for him to be on an all-time run that has again legitimately putting him on a par with Tiger. Instead, it feels like he's in a bit of a slump. Are we putting too much stock in winning, or again, does it just prove how great Tiger was that he probably would have won those three tournaments?
Yeah, no, he's fine. I mean, so, you know, the one thing is the Thursday, the weird Thursday stuff. So this tournament with Cam Young, far and away, was the best player at that tournament. But if Scottie had shot like a 67, let's say, on Thursday instead of whatever he shot, he could have been in the mix. He could have also been head and shoulders above everybody else. And so there is just that little thing. And, you know, golf is even more competitive now than it was when Tiger was there. And when Tiger was there, it was more competitive than when Jack Nicklaus played. And it just goes in that direction. So, you know, this year will be judged by Scottie by how he fares in the last three majors. But like this question said, he's right there. I wrote in my preview, pat myself on the back here, my preview for the Cadillac for Doral. I was like, I picked Cam Young to win, but I said, I don't think Scottie Scheffler can realistically finish worse than third. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, you know, you're a little bit lucky with Cam Young that he played like a golden god and putted better than he ever has. But like, this is what Scottie is doing right now. He is the best player in the world. He is always there. And it's just going to be a matter of these next few months, whether, you know, he comes away with zero majors this year or whether he wins one or you know, probably two at the highest. But it's just a matter of, can he string it together in that 1 week? And if he does, all the discussion is basically over, right? I mean, it's like, he's just back. We saw this a little bit last year. Last year he was hurt, so it was a little different. Same thing. There was a buildup, and then he hit the ground running. He wasn't ready at the Masters. By the PGA, he was a golden god again.
And he's dealing now with what Rory had to deal with, what Tiger had to deal with, that for anybody else is a sensational run of form, is seen as a dip and a question of, ooh, you know, how well prepared is he for the PGA? Whereas we'll just look at his results and go, he couldn't in some ways be better prepared results-wise. There's just something a little bit off when the pressure is on the Thursday, that when he has to chase it, his golf, as McIlroy's was, as Tiger's was, when he has to, can be aggressive and free, he can do unbelievable damage. But you sort of feel if he puts himself in a position on the Thursday next week where he's 4 or 5 under par after the first round, that, you know, it may well be game over. Unless they screw him like they kind of did at Augusta on the Friday.
Yeah, right. Well, the whole mud ball thing is so fascinating at Augusta. But anyway, yeah, I agree. But there's also the case, though, which is cool this year, where you've got Rory playing really well. We'll see if Rory can keep it going. We haven't really seen him since. We'll see if, whether it's like last year or whether he's kind of figured out how to stay at that level. But also, you've got two guys in Cam Young and Matt Fitzpatrick who are playing out of their minds. And so they are playing at an extremely, extremely high level, which is cool because I think, you know, I'm not 100% convinced right now that Cam Young isn't a better player than Scottie and that Matt Fitzpatrick might not be at this exact moment a better player than Scottie because they're both playing so well. So I think this PGA is, I'm super excited for it. It's at a really cool course. You know, if I were a golf fan, like all our listeners, I would be pretty pumped to watch this one.
When we're chatting in a month and post PGA, regardless of what happens with Scottie, how big a deal do you think his chase for the career Grand Slam is going to be heading into the US Open?
Yeah, not a big deal yet, I don't think. It's still so new. It's happened so fast. And so there are three things, right? There are three ways that a career Grand Slam narrative can go. It can be where a guy is like Rory, where he's on the cusp constantly and it's a big story all the time. It can be like Scottie, where It's so new that you're like not really expecting it, and it's not that big a storyline yet. Or it can be like Jordan Spieth, where you've fallen off so far that we don't really even talk about it anymore. There may be like one question, right? Like, oh, Jordan, at the PGA, you could complete the career Grand Slam. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, forgot about that. So I think Scottie's in the former category of it's too new. It would need to be like 3 or 4 more years where he hadn't won it. Then it starts to become big. Then it starts to go, is he going to do it like Rory, or is he Phil Mickelson where he's never going to win the U.S. Open?
I'll skip forward to a question on Jordan Spieth, since you did mention him. Question for Shane and Nathan. I know you have a lot of love for Jordan Spieth, but he's had one top 10 in the last year, yet he still gets endless coverage every weekend. He's 50th in the world. Michael Brennan is 51st. And if Brennan was 5 shots ahead, we'd still see more shots of Spieth. What I'm asking is, when do we need to move on from Jordan Spieth and treat him like the also-ran that he actually is?
You'll never do it as long as he's playing, because he's Jordan Spieth. He's not an also-ran. He's a star. He's a needle mover. People love him. He and Rory are the only two guys that people really love, in terms of like, they're going to tune in to watch him specifically. Ratings are going to go up, and Tiger, obviously. But those are the only two modern guys who are really in the mix, even still today. So look, Jordan was 7 under after a round at Doral. He was 1 shot off Cam Young's lead. Everybody was excited. I was excited. We're going to keep coming back. Like the pigs are going to keep coming back to the slop. Every time Jordan Spieth gives us like the slightest opportunity, we're going to be there because he's a compelling figure. And we all have the memories of how exciting it was when he won. And so that's not going away. Just like Rory, right? I mean, Rory never dropped as much as Spieth did. Not even close. But that's the thing. It's like you're never getting off Rory McIlroy ever. And you're never getting off Spieth.
He had that crazy run that just always keeps us a little bit in there over the past month or so, where in one round he led off the tee, in another round he led tee to green, in another round he led in putting, and you're going, oh, all he has to do is the simple bit and do it all in the one tournament and he is going to absolutely kill it. And there is, because of what he did a decade ago at this stage, which is a little bit mad to think it like that, that we still have this belief in the Spieth magic that it shouldn't work, but maybe one day it just will all click again. And like the Michael Brennan might go on and have a very good career and maybe he gets to a level where he can win a major championship or something like that. But it's very hard in modern sport and in golf, as you said, to get into people's hearts and to give them something to be genuinely excited about. And Spieth and McIlroy are probably the only ones who've really done that since Tiger. Mm-hmm. And because of that, everyone's willing to give him as much road as he needs.
Yeah, I like the way you phrase that, to get in your hearts, because that's exactly what they've done. Like, they're in our hearts, or whatever you want to call it. What's the song? They're in our hearts, they're in our soul.
You care about them. Like, you properly, you're invested.
And you get that extra little bit of excited when they're in the mix, always. And so, yeah, to your point, this is so classic Spieth, that after Augusta, he was saying, like, my ball striking is as good as it's ever been. I just need to putt. Then at the Heritage, he led the field in putting. It was like almost dead last in ball striking. And it's just like, we're never getting off this roller coaster, ever. I mean, it's going to be another decade before we can let him go, at least.
I think you already answered this, but can Cam Young overtake Scottie as world number one?
Yeah, I think so. It's... You know, a friend of mine who knows a lot about golf told me that guys who draw the ball have this issue where there's like a short window, like they don't keep this level up. And you know, I don't know if that's true. I'm not that deep into it where I know if that's a true thing. We do sometimes have this where, like, Wyndham Clark looked so good when he won the U.S. Open, that little stretch. Remember he won at Quail Hollow too, where you're like, he is one of the best players in the world right now. And Wyndham Clark's whole thing was, you know, he couldn't get over the mental hurdles, but he finally figured it out. He's got a psychiatrist. He's always been a thoroughbred, and now he's showing it. This guy's here to stay. And it's like, where are we now, right? And so there is always the temptation, because I'm looking at Cam Young going, I watched him at the Wyndham last year. I was there when he just dominated everybody. I watched him at Bethpage, and now I'm watching him be clutch as hell at the Players. Look, the Masters, he was right there with a chance to win. Maybe he wasn't quite ready for that pressure yet. But then he goes and murders the field at Doral. I'm going, yeah, this guy's with us for 5 years at least. I mean, this guy is maybe the best player in the world, or number two or number three at worst, and he's going to be here. But you don't know that, do you? I mean, that's the thing. It's like you don't know. So right now, the way he's playing to me, yes, it looks like he could be number one in the world by this time next year. I wouldn't bet on it. I'd still bet on Scotty. Mm-hmm. But the game is so unbelievable. I mean, and he's figured out the putting. It's just all there. I look at him and I think he's got this kind of character that has lasting power more than Wyndham Clark. We just don't know. But I think, like, sky's the limit right now. I mean, he's awesome.
Now that we've seen the demise of Liv, how long does Shane give TGL?
I don't know. It's kind of the same as Liv, where it's like, as long as they want to keep funding it, right? As long as it's like they see it as something viable, are they getting something out of it in terms of screen golf that goes beyond whatever ratings they get? You know, I've said before, I don't really like TGL. I don't watch it, and I don't. The times I have watched it, I haven't really had that much fun. But there are people who do like it. So I don't know. I think, look, Liv was a dead product, dead on arrival, pretty much, and it was just a matter of how long the Saudis wanted to keep it on life support. I don't know that the TGL is exactly like that, but it feels like the rhythms are the same, where as of now, it's not blowing up, right? It's not blowing up in people's consciousness or whatever. So it's just a matter, yeah, I don't know. It just feels like professional bowling or something, where it's like, maybe they'll keep coming back a little bit, but it's not in people's hearts, Nathan, as we talk about.
We don't know the business model for it. Like, we've sort of spoken about the numbers and declining numbers, but maybe have found a level, and maybe that's the level they knew was going to be sustainable, or maybe they're thinking, again, like the Saudis would live of, oh, this is something new and radical, and we'll transform golf in a way that nobody's ever seen, and we'll get 5 million viewers every week, and that obviously hasn't happened. One last question. Sean F. posted this a few weeks back. I'm sensing a tone with Sean F. when he put this back in last week. Posted this a few weeks back, but it was in the middle of the Masters week. I'll post it once more, and then I'll leave it. So,
okay.
I'm not even really going to acknowledge his first question was, I keep hearing yourself and Shane discuss the term soccer and football. Can we please put this to bed once and for all? Dubliners use the word football. Everyone else in Ireland use the words interchangeably and have always done so. Look at the websites of the Limerick Leader or the Mayo People. I don't think there is a Mayo People. I think you'll find it's the Mayo News or the Western People. Two very different things.
Oh,
just for a bit of clarity there.
They
use the term soccer. Did we have a discussion about this a few weeks ago? I find, as someone from Mayo, I use it depending on who I'm talking to.
Interesting.
And what we're talking about. Like, if we're talking about Gaelic football in general, and I want to talk about something that's happening in what I would normally call football, I might call it soccer.
Interesting.
But I haven't thought that deeply about it.
Yeah, so when I was I went to UCD, I told you, for a semester study, and it was all, everyone told me that we call it soccer here. It's the only place in Europe where we call it soccer.
What? No.
Because we have Gaelic football. That's everybody called it soccer.
No.
This was 2003, so maybe times have changed, Nathan. Oh, I don't know.
Never. Here's his second question, more importantly, and this is a good question. We've got over the tonal issues from Sean and all of that bit, and we appreciate this question. He does start with, I've asked this a few times with no success. You see, what happens here is, you see, in fairness now, you screwed yourself, Sean, because your first question sparked about 500 answers on the Discord channel of people rowing with each other, and then the second one gets slightly lost, so I'm giving myself a free pass.
Okay.
As a golfer with a standard midlife crisis, I've entertained the silly idea of leaving my family for a life on the road, perhaps as a caddy on one of the tours. It appears that most modern caddies are former elite-level amateurs or close to it. Harry Diamond, for example. Are there any highly respected caddies on tour that can barely hit a ball or can hit it as badly as the rest of us? I expect there were many of those in the past, but are they now a dying breed? So poor Owl Sean is having a midlife crisis and is having that thought process of, those guys' caddies seem to go from, you know, city to city. No great expectation on, you know, quality of life or anything. Do what they want. On they go. I want a bit of that. No responsibility.
We're at a very different place in midlife crises. I have taken up bird watching. I want to, like, be
worse.
Home.
Your family would probably be happier if you had left to become a caddy than bird watching.
No, bird watching is the best. I this is like for next week. I want people on Discord, if you're watching, what's the birding culture in Ireland? What's it like out there? Are people out there? Do you have your birders? Anyway, I think the idea of being a caddy on the road week after week is like the worst thing. To me, that's like going on a cruise ship and catching hantavirus, like, but constantly. So I wouldn't want to do that. However, yeah, great question by Sean. And actually, it kind of spawns an idea. If you read a headline that was like, who is the worst, which caddy is the worst golfer on the PGA Tour, colon, an investigation, you'd click the shit out of that, right? You'd click that. You'd read that so quickly. That's a great idea for a story. I'm going to do that.
You should do that.
I'm going to credit Sean F.
Do. Credit our podcast, please, for that credit. It is a good idea. I suspect he's right. Like, but I would say, if you want life on the road as a caddy, and again, the profession has changed. A lot of these guys are very young and fit and making lots of money now, so they don't have to be scrapping around. But, you know, I would go down to the venue of a golf tournament such as the Irish Open or something like that on, say, the Monday night, and go to the local pub and get a sense of the atmosphere and decide if that's the life for you.
Yeah.
Because basically, the few times I have done that, the only people in there on the Monday night are the caddies who are going, all right, maybe Monday night and Tuesday night we'll get away with it a bit and, you know, we'll see what this place is all about and we'll go heavy on it.
I think there's like probably, you know, the days of, man, Tyrrell Hatton had that caddy Mick. Do you remember him, the old guy?
Mm.
Old big guy. He was so funny. He was so funny. And he would joke about being an alcoholic, but I don't think he was joking. But he would constantly joke about drinking. But I think my point is, I think that culture where it's like, oh, the hard drinking, hard partying caddies, I think like everything else is probably being lost to the professionalism and corporatization of sport, where I bet now, like, you'd be surprised. Like, you know, I'm sure there are still the, you know, the party animal caddies, but the ones for the top guys, it's like they're going to Bible study and then they're going in and, you know, they're walking the course and studying. And it's, you know, I don't think it's as sexy as Sean F. would like to imagine as a lifestyle.
Yeah. Listen, Sean, if it's, I don't know how deep and how much despair there is in your midlife crisis right now, but I'd seriously think about what your life options are. You know, when you're going from the Turkish Open to God knows where, you are treated like utter shit.
Mm.
Everywhere you go.
And
listen, if that's better, than hanging with your family, Sean, you go for it.
Yeah. Be careful, Sean. Don't quit your job without some serious studying.
But just to be clear, Sean, also don't take up bird watching.
No, dude, Sean, you'll find peace, my friend. You'll find peace in the birds. You know that they're all dinosaurs, Nathan? I didn't know that. These are the dinosaurs. They evolved into birds. So
I'm getting the wrap-up sign from Brona, not because anyone needs the studio, just because she can't listen to any more of this, which I think is
birds next time and bread, Nathan.
I look forward to the update on the bread.
I'm going to try to get a piece, and I'll have it, and I can show everybody what it looks like on the Zoom.
Great. Why are you bringing that out of the restaurant? Long story. Anyways, Shane Ryan, we'll talk to you next week live from the PGA Championship.
Sounds good. Well, all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.